Welcome to Crippled System, episode 163.
We just damn it!
Stop it, start it over.
Nope.
No!
You're incompetent.
Can't stop, won't stop.
164.
Never stop, never stopping. I recommend that movie, it's really good.
I just told you that.
So, and I trust you that much.
I have to point out that I'm like the source of information from like listeners. Like they message me like their thoughts and their opinions, and I've been told Jeremy is never allowed on the podcast again if Nathan's not here to keep him in check, because Jeremy unbridled has turned some people off. Like, he couldn't handle the Jeremy onslaught.
He's the kudzu, I'm the weed whacker.
I was too excited.
You were too excited. It was disturbing people, and when you got too negative, you were just too negative. There was no one there to slap you down, so you're all over the board.
Yeah. So. People are unhappy that I think that Rhett got really good and Legion got really bad.
People what? Ask me why Brian Kerr is allowed to talk. People ask me why I don't kill myself. It's a very interesting
bit of feedback. I've never known why any of us don't kill ourselves. We should introduce ourselves, though, because we're not on camera, so people don't have cues.
Yeah. My name's Brian.
My name's Nathan.
My name's Jeremy.
My name's also Brian.
There you go.
I love to talk when I want.
But
I do what I want.
Something. I forgot what I was going to say.
Oh.
Oh, well.
Any announcements?
There's a event in Oshkosh on July 9th.
That one's fucky.
Why?
It's weird. Like,
I thought it was a Mark III event.
It's a Mark III event, but it's like a progression event.
Oh.
Where like the first thing is 15, then 50, then 75, then 100. You can bring two casters that you can switch out.
They skip the 25 and 35?
And who does 15 in Mark III? Is that
15 in Mark III. That's a joke, right?
No.
Typo?
Nope.
It's basically points. it's like the 1 point
battle box. Yeah.
No, but battle box is zero these days.
I'm aware, but I'm saying it's basically battle box.
Yeah, and well, and it also is battle group only, so you have to pull battle group only models in.
Said for the 15.
What's that?
15 point when said
I guess you can swap your caster around at one point.
You can swap your casters around at any point, and I'm talking to their PG right now to see try and hammer out some stuff, because that makes me think that I can have a 15-point list with one caster and another completely different 15-point list with another caster and figure out which one I'll play.
Or do you just play down points on whichever one has more War Beast points, War Jack points?
I think he said that the lists don't have to be the same.
I did hit going on my phone a minute ago, but I might hit maybe.
So it's almost it's basically like a standard two-list steamroller, except you have two lists of lists.
Yeah.
Because each one of them will have the progression.
I'm out.
Yeah,
I have a hard time saying no to an Oshkosh event just because of Pete's Garage.
I've been there now multiple times. We just skip Pete's. It's too busy. I don't like crowds.
Well, the thing is now you can go out on the porch, and if there's more than three people on the porch, the people have enough respect to not smoke or throw up on you. If you go inside,
one or
you
the
lose
other,
that nicety.
You have to pick.
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
You're going to get vomited or a lot of smoke on you, one of the two.
Gross.
I know which one I pick.
The smoke kind of flavors the burger a little bit. Nothing like a Marlboro Light to make your quarter pounder go down better, right?
Indeed.
I have an anecdote.
Is it an announcement?
Don't we have an announcement?
I don't have any other announcements.
There's a thing soon.
So July 16th is going to be the Wisconsin Team Championship. Technically, the sign-up reg date has passed, but don't worry. If you want to trickle in by the end of June, you'll be fine. Because lists are going to be locked the 8th.
July 8th.
And
how many?
I don't know how many people give a shit about who's playing enough to have their list be affected by going, oh, Brian Kerr's on a team with blah, 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 I'll do this. Like, I don't know if that people care about that. But because people might, you know, the hardcore, we can't even wiggle anymore deadline for registration is going to be the end of June, I think. Just give a week for people to think about stuff.
I better get on that. I have 4 out of my 5.
Because I got okay, you're up to 4. Is Tom Gwan and Chris Green on your team?
Yup.
I don't know who your 4th is.
Cool Kurt.
Cool Kurt? That's awesome. So, yeah, you can get a 5th. And then somebody else who I've never met or heard of messaged me on the main boards about getting another St. Louis team together. So we still got some people coming.
Yeah, we have some ideas for our 5th. But, yeah, we'll be regging soon. We're up to 4. Okay.
Awesome.
We're pretty stoked. We're going to roll in. None of us have played I've played 2 games in Mark III, which I think means, other than Tom Gwan, I've played twice as many games as the rest of the team put together.
Nice.
So we'll be ready to rock.
Chris Green's a pushover, so you guys already have a weak spot in your team.
I told Katie who's on my team, and I told her I've never felt like the weak link in a team tournament before, but I might in this one.
And I believe that we settled on...
Katie wasn't interested. I asked her.
I believe we settled on 3 rounds on Saturday and then finished the tournament on Sunday.
Let's talk about... Travis is posted voting. I'm assuming it was you guys behind the scenes voting.
Now, we emailed all the teams that had been registered at that point in time to see if they had preferences.
I never got an email.
Travis doesn't like you.
That's fair.
That's a fact.
If he did, I might have my delete. I don't know.
And I was also just auto delete anything from Travis.
Yeah. He's in my porn.
But yeah, I did talk to Travis. I didn't just like start talking to people about regging late. I made sure it was okay.
Yeah.
You should just walk right in on the day.
I mean, that's how we do. We roll.
Just walk in with cash in hand and go, we got boom. This shit.
Well, that's why part of the reason, like I was gone last week, so like Wednesday's my second chance to play Mark III, and then this weekend I got like a big thing going to GameStrike. Both days it kind of could bring them back. People are going to come and play War Machine all day, so hopefully I can get like three games in a day. So after the weekend, I'll have an idea. Like, our team is talking about what we're actually going to do a little bit.
Yeah, I would not going to be coordinated Wednesday, at all. But I literally cannot play on Wednesday because the cards aren't out. So if I want to play Mark III, I have to play War Room. And I defend War Room. I used it all of Mark II. I tell people it's not that bad. Don't listen to Crash Droids, whatever. I don't know how long these incompetent piles of shit have been working on War Room for Mark III. War Room 2, okay? It's not a fucking surprise to you knuckleheads that Arcadius can take a Gorax. Guess what Arcadius can't fucking do in War Room 2?
Take a Gorax.
Can't take a fucking Gorax.
That's not the only problem.
Well, it's like Halley 3 all over again. Just fucking do it. Make Goraxes, like, behind the scenes, code them to be a minion war beast, and then just put Animosity with the other seven Warlocks. Like, done. Yeah. Like, I don't care how you fucking do it. Why can I not have Arcadius and a Gorax in a list?
You have War Room, right?
Yeah.
So you what is the Gorax?
You can't put the Gorax in the list.
Yes, the Gorax costs the same as a Battle Boar, so I can just put a Battle Boar and know that I'm using. I don't know if the boxes match. If the boxes don't match, then I'm fucked.
I have the minion cards.
Point wise, I know that I have the cards. The point is, they should have, like, this is not a difficult thing. This is Halley 3 all over again. Like, how did Halley 3 in Mark 2 hit street did without War Room
people
figuring
it
out?
I have something to make you even more angry. So until earlier this week, they released a patch with no patch notes. And everybody's like, what was the patch? I know what the patch was because I reported some of these bugs. One of them was, if you saved your lists to the cloud and then loaded them from the cloud, get fucked, all your lists get completely wiped out and replaced with empty lists with no names and nothing in them. So you could create 30 lists.
That's not how saving works?
That's not how saving works. So, and I wrote them a bug report, which they still haven't responded to, even though they've released the patch that fixed it. And I went on their forum thread, where a lot of people were like, hey guys, what the hell? And they were like, oh, don't worry. We know that you wrote 40 lists, and then saved them in the cloud, and then loaded them to your device, and lost all 40 lists. But it's fine, because on the cloud, they're still there.
Oh, that's handy.
I don't have any way to give them to you. You can't see them again. You'll have to rewrite them. But don't worry, they exist on the cloud. Well, now, if you write three more lists and upload those to the cloud, everything on the cloud gets wiped out. So don't save anything else to the cloud because you'll lose your 40 lists.
You get one batch to the cloud and you don't get that batch back.
Yup. They fixed that earlier this week. Well, congratulations.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, like, I mean, that I'm almost less mad about because it's harder for them.
What? It's hard for them to have practiced now, saving
with the Halley
lists.
Thing, though. That's they true. Said like, they said Halley 3 can't be in War Room for a while because we fucked up. Did they say the Gorax was overstock, or have they said nothing?
Every thread I found, there are like three threads on the Privateer Press forum that say, hey, you know you can't take Gorax with Arcadius, and none of them has a single reply.
Yep.
Yeah. So just nothing.
They
just
never responded saying they were going to fix Karchev's fist to be the right range, but they stealth patched that this week.
Yeah, I know. That was the other thing.
His fist is an inch now.
But like, the thing is, like,
they couldn't even put it in the patch. They couldn't even admit their screw ups enough to put them in the patch notes.
Functionality issues bug me less because whatever. Like, stress test and shit. Like, all of a sudden there's a billion people.
No. They admitted no one could save or load.
No,
not one person can do it. They didn't try saving and loading.
It's the core functionality of this Warcaster is his ability to bring a Gorax. Like,
I mean, that's
not
key.
Some unforeseen thing. So, like, you're right. They should have seen the functionality, but it's not like the black and white of, like, can bring Goraxes. Well, we just won't let that.
So you're not playing it Wednesday?
I am. I just can't play Arcadius with Goraxes.
All right.
And since I've promised to never not play Arcadius again.
Fair enough. So that's announcements. A little bit of side rage there. Not a shocking thing.
Your guy's right. Nathan tones me down a lot.
Yeah, he does.
But I have an anecdote, and I need to tell this anecdote now because Raylene wants to be present for this anecdote. All right. And then she can go downstairs and read and whatnot. But so we drove to Denver. We stopped in Denver for a few days to visit family, but the whole point of our road trip was to go down to Albuquerque to see Stephen King and George R. R. Martin on stage chit-chatting for an hour, which the fastest hour of my life, you know, just watching those two talk and then it was just over. It was very infuriating. But it was super cool, and they did a lot of fun stuff. We bought some turquoise and stuff because we're in New Mexico.
I could fray knot this, by the way. I'm not going to, but I could fray knot this, but I won't. I know where you're going, and I'm gonna
I don't think you do.
I'm going to let you finish.
Final question of the thing.
Not the final question. The final question was great. Do you want to fray knot the final question?
No, you keep going.
The final question was Martin asking, how the fuck do you write so quickly? And he should have, because everybody in the room wanted to ask Stephen King how he wrote so quickly and then glare at Martin, because right. That was the... So Martin knew to ask that question.
Sure.
Yeah, and it was great. And the video is going to be on Martin's website soon-ish. They videotaped the whole thing so you can watch it. But you can't fray knot this anecdote, because this anecdote is great, and only two people in the room appreciated the anecdote as much as Raylene and I did, and that was Raylene and I. So... They're talking, and they were having an interesting talk about external evil versus internal evil, and how as horror writers, it's easy to do something like a boogeyman or a monster because they're just raw evil, and they're out there, and you kill them, and good wins, sure. Right? Whereas with internal evil, with a person, mm-hmm. You know, you get... Like, let's look at Game of Thrones. You have the White Walkers, we raise the dead, and we're evil, and then you have, like, Ramsay Bolton,
sure.
Right? Like, he's just as fucking evil as those things,
he's but not he's... the hero?
Right? You can discuss that. Like, maybe not with Ramsay, but with some characters, you can discuss that. There's the shade of gray. And even if they're flat out a villain, you can understand how they got there, why they got there. And even if there's no rational explanation, they're just a fucking psychopath, the fact that they are a human, like we're a human, reflects some of that horror onto us and everything. And they were talking about that, and they were talking about some good examples of characters in both their novels. And they had a good laugh about how, as writers, both of them are especially afraid of the character from Misery, Annie Wilkes, haha, you know, writers. Sure. And so Martin told an anecdote about the, quote, creepiest thing that's ever happened to me, end quote.
I know where this might be going.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And really, he says this really, and they're like, ooh. And we turn and look at each other, and he's like, yeah, one day I woke up, and there was a package outside my house with no note, no nothing, just a copy of Misery. You're... Oh. We freaked out. Everybody in the audience laughing, and we're just looking at each other and shitting our pants.
Oh my god.
Not people have done this, by the way. That's a key thing. One time.
One person. It was just all by itself in a box.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh my god.
It was amazing. We were turning to each other like, oh my god, it's a shame Brian couldn't make it.
I sort of ran out the door.
Just shuffling along because your erection is too big to walk.
Oh my god, that is good stuff.
Yeah. Like, so you're famous now,
Martin. I'm in his nightmares.
you now know that he found it. It was not filtered by his team, and nice. It had an effect on him. Ooh. It's literally the creepiest thing that's ever happened to him.
I mean, to be fair, a lot of women usually say that when they meet me. You know, not as many guys do, so it's nice that I can affect, you know, equally across the...
Wow.
That's amazing.
That's amazing. I feel like I'm done now.
Yeah, with life.
Yeah, it's like I've won life.
Yeah, my one regret in life was that we were not recording today because I wanted that color red you just turned to be on the internet forever.
Oh my god, they didn't have a Q&A. You guys would be like, hey, we know the guy.
No, but we were telling everybody in earshot to us. We were just, we know that guy. We know that guy. Just elbowing everybody around us.
Nice. The cameraman, when it was going to be, because he filmed it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for legal reasons, we could not verify to the cameraman that we knew the person who sent a thinly veiled death threat to George R. R. Martin. Well, we told him, we were like, we swear it was good-natured ribbing, not a death threat.
To be fair, he was like 2 months from getting anthrax from me, because that's the whole time I was like, I did it 1 year right on the beginning of the year, then the next year I was going to start anthrax, but it was like November he announced
a CD by the band Anthrax.
Yeah, of course. But like a month before the deadline was up, he had announced the book date, so then I couldn't mail the anthrax. Because that would have been just ridiculous. And you know, there was no reason. Mail.
Yeah.
So I still feel that motivated him to write faster. Now that I know it affected him on that level.
That's amazing.
I'm taking more of the credit. That's amazing. It is.
Yeah.
That is great.
And they were like, oh my god, we have to tell Brian when we get home.
Oh my god, that is ridiculous.
That's amazing.
He has been crazy.
Yeah.
He's like, Martin, I got the guy on the phone for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want his address? You can send him stuff back.
Oh, my god.
Oh, that's amazing.
I will say, because when you guys went to that, I was like, because I had already booked Origins before, and then I saw you guys, because you guys mentioned me if I wanted to go, and I was like, oh my god, these two things are on the exact same date. And I had canceled the year before Origins, so I just couldn't cancel twice. I was so torn. Even the day you guys were going, I'm like, man, if I could just quick drive to Albuquerque for this one day and come back.
Right.
I just fly out, fly back. But yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That is amazing.
I probably wouldn't. I would have been dragged out of there laughing. I would have just been on the floor laughing until people just hauled me out.
Like Joker gas had gotten into your system.
I would have passed out. There's 100%.
Oh, it was magical.
Yeah.
That it was kind of awesome. It was so, like, you start telling the anecdote, and I just like, ooh!
That's amazing. That is. So it was a good weekend?
Yeah. I just. Everything else, you know, drive, saw people, whatever.
Sure, whatever.
But that was the one anecdote.
How long was your drive?
It was 14 hours to Denver and then 6 hours to Albuquerque.
Did you guys take turns driving a little bit, or just?
I drove all the way there and down, and then on the way back, like, I drove the first couple hours, and then I started yawning. I'm like, tell you what, why don't I nap? Because since we were going west to east, we were going to lose an hour instead of gaining an hour. So instead of getting there at midnight, we were going to get home at like 2:30 in the morning. And that's just, even though it's the same amount of driving, it's just mentally that's different.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'll nap for a little, because I'm yawning. I know that I could sleep. So let me nap, and that way around like 6 or 7, we can switch, and I'll drive the rest of the way home, and you can sleep. And then like... She didn't let me. Like, I woke up at like midnight, and I'm like, I can drive. She's like, no, you're yawning, you're snoring, go back to sleep. So Raylene drove pretty much the whole way back.
But. Nice. Well, you did the whole 14 hours at one time, or you guys take
we didn't stop.
Yeah, because when I did 8 hours at Columbus by myself, and after about 6 hours, I was ready to just like start bumping other cars, like give myself some entertainment.
Yeah, I don't know.
You had each other. Yeah, you had the
we had each dog. Other, and we on the way home we listened to the Gunslinger book on tape because Raylene did the trick of signing up for Audible to get her one free book so that we could have something to entertain us the way back.
If my car was set up for that, I'd probably do this kind of stuff.
You don't have auxiliary port?
No,
oh.
My car is from like 2000.
But on the way out, I managed to. Normally that much driving I would start to have an issue, but it wasn't this bad. I think part of it was I started stop thinking about hours and stuff. I just thought about how many refills. Like, you know, it was gonna be like 6 tanks of gas or whatever, and that's not that, you know, 6. Look, we just got one down, 5 to go. Oh, 2 down, we're a third of the way there. Yeah. Dog walks and whatnot.
That helps too, you know, for those stops, just to get out of the getting out of the car is just helpful.
Yeah. Get out, walk the dog, stab a hobo.
Yeah.
You know, get things fresh.
What have you.
That's it.
Do you want to talk about Origins, Brian?
Origins is pretty cool. I was there. It's weird, though. So Origins, think of Origins as a mini Gen Con, more focused on role-playing and board games. There are quite a few miniature games, but it's just a, like maybe a fourth to a third the size of Gen Con.
Sure.
It's like Gen Con was in the 90s when I used to go as a kid. It's basically like when it was in Milwaukee, it was kind of that size. The dealer hall is still pretty huge. I floated up a bunch of stuff on the internet today. They still have lots of guests and stuff, and, you know, it's... What was weird is they started on Wednesday through Sunday, where Gen Con is Thursday through Sunday. But Wednesday at Origins is kind of like a half day con because like the dealer hall is not open, so like some of the vendors still sell stuff over in like their like the gaming section. So they have like their booth where they're gonna run demos, but they just bring their merchandise over to sell. So it's like this weird quasi half open day.
Interesting.
They had every con has a quirk.
Yeah.
They do all this like pre-registration online. You know, you go through the pre-registration line. But when you showed up on Wednesday to pre-reg, a lot of the computers were down to pre-reg. So the line to pre-reg was like 2.5 hours to get through. Ugh. The walk-up line to get in was like 13 minutes. So we're all standing in line for 2 hours. But they're just walking and getting their badges and leaving. And we're just like, I mean, for $10, I would have paid $10 more not to have been in the line for 2 hours. But
right.
But no, overall, it's a fun con. I've demoed a lot of games. I played a lot of games. It was kind of like, I stayed with the Hooks. Keith Hooks of internet fame.
Yeah, the captain.
And I basically reversed Keith him because when we first met him, he just latched onto us. So I just kind of followed those guys around because that's their hometown. They're all from there. And we stay at the con for like 7 hours and we go board game for 6 or 7 hours at their house back and forth. There's like a really nice place called the North Market down there. It's kind of like Gen Con has all these food trucks that you hang out with and you go eat, but North Market's like a permanent building, but it's basically like a food truck area because it's like a lot of just crazy shops inside of it.
Okay.
Which was pretty neat. I only bought like 3 board games, but I bought the Perfect Year Press showed up for the first time in 8 years. I got some of my stuff there. I even bought a Guild Ball team because it was super cheap. I was like, whatever, I'll just get a Guild Ball team. I don't know what I'm gonna do with it, but they have this deal where you get a bunch of miles for like $100. So
yeah,
it's like it's like a full team of every model. So I was like, well, I'll just buy because I'm gonna con and I throw money to everything.
That's true. You do.
whatever you got to tell yourself.
So. Yeah. And now you're selling board games. Well, that's
I bought a couple of new board games. I'm trying to sell about a third of my collection. I just want to thin it down.
I'll take Shadows off your hands for $50.
Yeah. You need to get Jordan Bouchois to be more into two-player games because you're getting rid of like four or five great two-player war games.
Only two.
What are you getting rid of?
Well, three. You're getting rid of three. Five Armies and
BioShock
Infinite.
Both are good games. They're both very solid. It's just I still have another four on top of that of two-player games.
Yeah.
So I just have too many. I have too many good two-player money games, and I'd rather get rid of it than bring it out once a year.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
I'm a reverse hoarder. I can't handle things on the shelf not moving. I just got to get the fuck out of my house or I'll just burn it.
Katie's got a rule that if she hasn't used something in a year, it gets tossed.
Yeah, it's a good way to go. It occasionally burns me. I do once in a blue moon rebuy something because of that strategy, but not enough to make me
regret it up. Yeah, that's fair.
And it's usually, I don't sell things that are like, my StarCraft I haven't played in a year, but it's out of print. I love it.
You're not going to get rid of
it. And I know at some point I'll bring it out for six times in a row.
Yeah, you're not going to get rid of something like that.
Yeah. But no, Origins is a lot of fun. I mean, Saturday was also Pride Day in Columbus, and I guess they have the biggest Pride parade in the Midwest. So, and it goes right by the convention center, so I kind of went out to support for that since, you know, they had their big thing last week. So it's just nice to kind of see that and just see the community kind of embrace that, which is kind of cool. Little change of pace in the middle of the game and go out there and see the shenanigans.
I wish Katie and I could have been there. We originally had signed up to go, and then a friend of mine decided to get married. Deep lack of respect for my prior plans. He decided to get married that same weekend.
Did you? You should have tried to break him up.
I was tempted, but they've been together since high school, so would have been tricky.
Yeah, see, they have to like live their life and meet other people.
I mean, it would have been fine, except then they got married in North Dakota. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever been to North Dakota.
It's the worst Dakota.
I mean, neither Dakota's very good.
South Dakota kicks ass. You shut your whore mouth.
I am not.
Excuse you.
No.
You got the Corn Palace in beautiful downtown Mitchell, South Dakota.
Okay.
Don't make that face. The Corn Palace fucking owns.
Uh-huh.
It owns bones.
Uh-huh.
You got Wall Drug.
Yep.
You got the Badlands.
Sure.
You got the Crazy Horse Monument.
Don't get me started about the Crazy Horse Monument.
You got Mount Rushmore.
What's your problem with the Crazy Horse?
Let's get you started about Crazy Horse.
Okay, so Mount Rushmore is amazing and historic and whatever.
And shitty compared to Crazy Horse.
And I went to South Dakota, and Crazy Horse is right there near Mount Rushmore. So we went to both, because why not? And you go to Crazy Horse. Now, bear in mind, Crazy Horse has existed for less than half of my life.
How long ago were you there, by the way? I'm just trying
I was
to
there
out
in,
how done
a,
this
in college.
Was.
It was mostly done. It was not quite finished.
So he has had a face
he
at
had
that
a face,
point? Okay,
yes.
Yeah. So,
But it had existed at that time for like 4 years. Like it had been in progress for 4 years.
No, that is not true. It's been in progress for like 70 years.
No.
Yes.
Well, what they told me was there was nothing here to see until like 4 years ago.
No, because I went there like when I was like 10.
So what's the? I guess we're about the same age. So that,
yeah, no, okay. It's the face as a finished like photorealistic face.
Yeah.
Was probably like 4 years, but the shape of him and the top of his arm, like okay, I mean, I guess that's splitting things. Like they had only gotten to where a face was recognizable.
My point
by
is
that.
The tour guide himself said that there was really nothing to see until about 4 years ago, and it was only like within the last year or two that like you could really see the face.
Yeah, sure.
And I was like, okay, great. But then you read any of the engravings or any of the signs or anything, and it makes it sound like this thing fucking predates Mount Rushmore. And that's horseshit.
Well, it does.
It does not.
But it does.
It does not.
Well, like,
what's the pro? How does it and how does it not?
Yeah, explain to me how it does.
The interesting thing about its timeline is the fact that... So... The progress has taken so long for it to get that point because it was literally one man.
Okay.
Literally. Not like one guy's dream and he had a small crew that he hired. Sure. It was one dude with a pickaxe carving out Crazy Horse by himself.
Okay.
And so that's why the progress has been so slow. And it's continued to be that slow because now it's that man's family doing
Well, answer
it
me this.
Because they refused.
Did he start after Mount Rushmore was done?
I don't.
Because he did. I know that for a fact.
Okay.
So it's not older than Mount Rushmore. And Mount Rushmore took a while to build.
The plans might be, though. Because I wonder...
No. You just get a hammer and a chisel, you go to a mountain and start chipping away. How's it that hard?
Well, that's the thing is, like, because the privateer... Well, because there's a big issue with... Well, whatever. The point is, it's fucking huge. Like, his head is bigger than Mount Rushmore.
I mean, it's big. It's impressive.
It's going to be impressive in 700 years when it's done.
Eh.
We'll all be dead by then, don't worry.
We will.
I mean, that's true, too.
Mount Rushmore I found very underwhelming, because it's
really?
Like a postage stamp. It's like, oh, I thought that they were big, but they're like small and shitty.
It depends how close you get to it, but yeah, like depending on where you stand, it's pretty small.
Yeah, whereas like Crazy Horse, it's like that dude's 5 million feet tall.
Yeah, I mean, it's just arguably a bigger mountain. Like, it just is. And it's not, like, Mount Rushmore is like across, and he's just like big and tall.
Yeah, that profile, like the style of it's really cool.
It is, but I... like Mount Rushmore has like a lot of historic significance to the nation. And Crazy Horse does not. And if you visited both on the same day...
Racist!
No, it does not. Like,
no, he's super new.
You don't mean
the guy, you mean the monument.
I do not mean the person, Crazy Horse, versus the four people on Mount Rushmore. I mean the actual monument of Mount Rushmore has great historic significance to us as a country and has for quite a while.
Well, because we got rid of most of the Indians, so they don't really count anymore. We sure. still have a lot yeah. of
stop.
My well, and that's is, actually the weird thing about honoring them with the Crazy Horse Memorial is that it's super sacrilegious because like the that mountain is important to them, and they're like, yeah, we'll just carve the fuck out of it and make it look like a dude.
Yeah, like it's actually like incredibly offensive to the people it's supposed to represent.
Yeah, but it's also honoring them, so it's a catch 22.
So if I were, let's pretend that you thought that mirrors captured your soul. Let's just pretend for a moment.
Okay.
Would I be honoring you if I covered your entire home in mirrors? Because I would not. I would be saying, I want you to be honored the way I want to be honored, which is not the way to honor you.
That's slightly different. It would be like if I was an Irish person. No, that doesn't work.
That doesn't work either.
Because mirrors don't honor me in any way.
Everywhere you go, anyone can see you.
Yeah, that's not honoring me.
Well, you particularly.
So my point is, it would be like it's a weird mix because the monument is specifically meant to honor their culture. They're just doing it in the worst possible location.
Yeah, it's a terrible. Like if you actually understand their culture, it's a terrible idea to do it that way.
Although apparently they're still torn about it too, because like it was signed off by a bunch of tribal elders and stuff of the South Dakota.
I mean, I'm sure they got lots of money. I'm sure that had nothing to do with their decision.
Probably anyway. Not, actually. Probably
anyway.
Not.
Anyway.
Because the government's not involved in
South Dakota still looks like a barren wasteland from end to end that has four cool things in it.
It's a beautiful barren wasteland.
I have my last thing to say about Origins.
Okay. Oh, we were talking about Origins.
So Ben Lang was there too, which was really cool.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
And it's interesting because Ben Lang is up. He's like, me and Ben are the first people up in the house. And I went to the con with him one day. Otherwise, I went with the Hooks like hours later. Like the Hooks are the most... Like they're Keith is a kind of a serious gamer, but they have the most casual like con approach. They kind of stroll.
They do
in.
The same thing at Gen Con.
They stroll in, and it's like, oh, we've been there for 20 minutes. Let's go leave and eat.
Yeah.
They come back. Okay, we did one demo. Okay, let's go eat again. Okay, now we're back.
They do drinking home. Tours every year during Gen Con. During Gen Con, and while the convention hall's open.
And I'm not quite. I'm much closer to the Ben Lang scope of things. So it was just a very interesting experience trying to push myself, yet having the casual. Hooks around, which was still fun. I mean,
a blast.
Yeah, we gained a ton at their house. Demos, that's one thing I've learned, because I did more demos of games at this here than I did in a while, and some companies need, I know they get volunteers to help them out, but they really should make sure people helping them are doing a service to their game. Some of the demos I got, like I got a demo for Last Fry, which is a game that comes out later in the year. It's a hidden mechanic game, kind of like White Chapel. It's very much, the guy who made White Chapel made this game.
Yeah, Chapel, Fury of Dracula, well, Scotland Yard.
To me, Whitechapel and Fear of Dracula are the same in type only, but they're completely... It's like Battlestar and Dark Moon. They're massively different, but kind of the same. This is more of an hour-long game where it's hidden movement. You're like, one guy plays as a murderer, everyone plays camp counselors, and you have this like back-and-forth shenanigans. But the guy did a great demo. And some other games were really cool. I can never think of the name of the one war game. Mars. I sent you a couple pictures.
Red Planet. Mission Red Planet?
No.
The other one.
From the 80s, it's that war game Mars Empire or something it's called. It's this big like strategy war game.
Mare Nostrum?
Mare Nostrum. Really good demo. Then, man, we sit down and we get some demos of these games, and it's like, man, this guy, he reeks. I mean, if you're going to have a guy demo your booth, maybe the guy should shower or do something.
Sometime that
way. They always make fun of people attending cons smelling bad, but it's when the guy is given the first demo of the day and he already reeks bad, I mean, he's started out in the wrong side of things.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, this is my first time I've seen this game before. Let me demo it to you. We're like, oh, we got to go.
Yeah.
There's so many times you'd be like, you know what? The Gale Force 9 booth, we got a demo that was kind of bad for a new game, but I bought it because we just sat down after a round I knew I wanted the game. Even though the guy was incompetent at it. So we're like, you know what, sir, you showed us game for 10 minutes, but we're out. You know, we're
done.
Because you want to do like an hour long. So some of the demos weren't just like 5-minute demos. Some of them was like, you can play this game for like an hour and a half to really know if you like it or not. But sometimes we just bolt it after like 5 minutes because like this guy is just sad. It's just a shame that some companies can't get
true or false. They explain games worse than Keith Hooks.
Well, if Keith is kind of like a con, he's very hit or miss. It was very much like a con. Sometimes Keith is like, man, I want to play this game really bad. So we sit down and he opens it up for the very first time, starts punching it out, grabbing the rule book. We're like, nope, not playing that game with you today, Keith. Yeah. So I'll play games with you. If he's played a game before, he can teach it fine.
Yeah, that's true.
But when he wants to do the off the cuff, let's see how this game works together, I'm like, nope.
My the first time I ever had the Keith Hooks approach of learning a game was at Gen Con. This is 2 or 3 years ago at this point, and it was the year Caverna came out. So him and Jen bought Caverna, and so did Brian, because obviously. And so we're sitting down that night to play Caverna, and they're like, oh, well, we'll bring our copy, because we bought it, and we've already looked through it. And they get there, and it was still plastic-wrapped. Like, they had not gone through it. And then they opened it up and started punching things out. And Caverna takes roughly an eternity to punch out all the chips. Roughly. And then, meanwhile, Keith is flipping through the rule book. And bear in mind, they'd done a beer tour that day, so he's super drunk, flipping through the rule book at random and announcing random rules.
Yeah.
It was the best.
If it wasn't for the fact that a couple of us had played a lot of Agricola, that game
never would have happened.
Never would have taken off.
Yeah. And we played it wrong, but we played it, you know, enough to have fun.
Yeah, it was.
It was an experience.
My favorite Gen Con demo situations were the time that I made the guy giving the demo cry. And then the other times are... Fantasy Flight Games is amazing in that they play their games wrong. Because we did demos of the Game of Thrones board game. Yeah. I think I've talked to you about this one before, but like one, we were playing the demo and like two of us had played the game before, but like, oh, you know, they're like, hey, we need a couple more people to run a demo game of this. Like, sure, we'll sit down and we'll slow play it. We'll play the Lannisters or whatever so that we'll lose.
Sure.
And we let the Wildlings win one time, like purposely tanked the vote because it would fuck over one guy more. And the guy giving the demo had to double check that was allowed.
What?
Well, it had never occurred to them to tank it. Like, they're like, well,
all the time.
But no, like,
in our game,
you're supposed to beat them. Like, that was their thing. Yeah. Or like, we played Dracoon, which is a little tile dungeon explorer thing where you all run around and you try to get things, whatever. And it's a 4-player game and it's square tiles. And the first guy went north and the second guy went east and the third guy went south and I went east and followed that guy. Because let him trigger all the traps and die and then I'll steal all the gold and shit. And the demo guy's like, well, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm following him. And he's like, well, no, go off in your own way. I'm like, fuck that. It's dark and dangerous. Like, he can run into the spike pit and then I'll loot his corpse. It was just hilarious how the people who design those games, they're not vicious enough.
Well, and some of it is people teaching the game. I mean, some at Gen Con, you will actually get sometimes the designers. Yeah. But like the people who were demoing my games, were none of them were like the designers. They were just like either staff of the company that normally do like the mailroom, but they bring them in to do like the demos or volunteers. And it's like so wildly
disparate,
you know, all over the place. I finally got to play that Telsa versus Edison game. I saw it for a couple of years. It's very cool, but exceptionally dry. So I don't know if it's a game. I would play it if someone had it, but I probably won't own it myself. But it was neat.
Is it a race to murder elephants or?
No, it's not a race to murder elephants.
Oh. What's the point of being Edison then?
I don't know. I can't answer that. But yeah, and also Origins is awesome. I want to go back, but when I look at it, you know, beginning of the year, I have to look at a calendar and go, okay, which cons can I go to? And it definitely is one that I would want to go to again.
It's starting on a Wednesday makes it rough.
Yeah, but I mean, honestly, that's just optional. If you showed up Wednesday night and just skipped Wednesday.
And a lot of people did that stayed at the Hook's house.
Exactly. I just came down because I wanted to just hang with it. I took the whole week off. My whole week was off because I just took a week off.
Yeah.
So I had the time. But I could see if I went down again.
Next year, Katie and I are going to totally make it and tell any of our friends they can't get married.
Columbus, Ohio.
Oh. Fair.
Yeah.
It's 8 hours. Honestly, it was like 7.5. On my way back, two fun things happened. One, my chase car got pulled over because my rabbit
got pulled over.
Yeah.
I ran over a bird that was just walking across the highway.
I hit a bird. I didn't run it over, but I was driving and it was on the side of the road and it flew in front of the car and just smashed right into the windshield. I've never done that. Like, I thought birds were literally unhittable.
Mine was just wobbling
around. And I'm going 90 because I was speeding at the time. I'm not going to do anything about this. I'm just going to hit a bird. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
I hit it and behind me, feathers are going to fly. Yep.
You Randy Johnson, that thing.
Yeah. I'm like, bird, I'm coming. He's like, just walking like a fucking idiot.
There was a guy doing that in Santa Fe. We were driving north because we were going to stop at Martin's Theater down there. We were driving from Albuquerque to Santa Fe.
I would have given the people behind the counter a copy of Misery.
Sure.
Give it to Martin when he gets in later. He'll know why.
He'll know who it's from. But like, there was a car broken down on the other side of the highway. But this guy just was walking across.
I was very nonchalant when I bought it. I was very undercover when I bought it. Got it cash. I mailed it from a place. A post office not even near my house. It was all wore gloves. It was all. It was. I'm 100% serious in all that.
I believe you.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, but no, the guy was just walking across the highway. He didn't stop and look, and he didn't run. He was just casually walking across the highway. And I'm like, I'm tempted not to slow down, but
yeah,
I did.
So should we transition?
Do we want to talk about Mark III?
Kerr's been waiting patiently to talk about Mark III.
I'm fine. I was thinking about talking.
He's drinking a few beers. He's drinking three beers while he's waiting.
He's only got one left.
Wow. Yeah, I got to pace myself. No, I saw a squirrel walk for the first time the other day. That shit's weird. If you've never seen a squirrel walk.
If they don't hop when they actually walk.
I only see squirrels hop around, but this one actually walked. It just looked fucking weird.
Kangaroos are kind of weird when you watch a kangaroo slowly moving.
Yeah, I've never seen that either.
Yeah.
But I once upon a time used to drive truck for a soda company, and it was like just common knowledge for, I think, almost all truck drivers that if you come across any kind of animal, you just hit it and you keep going, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's just... I hit a deer.
Well, especially a truck. Like, if you veer or try to stop, like, there's raw danger there. Well, if you're driving a little Yugo or something, you can brake. You can steer. But when you've got a billion pounds of whatever,
just
fuck that deer.
No, I guess, like, for Mark III stuff, we can talk about a little bit of War Machine stuff.
Yeah, I sadly didn't play any War Machine last week. Like I said, I played tonight. I have, like, three Army Transports filled of stuff because I want to play. Because I'm hoping to get a bunch of games this day, and I have no idea what list I'm going to play. So I just have, like, literally almost...
Yeah.
I have all my cases.
I took the gym approach on Wednesday. I was like, I have a list for each caster. Either pick a caster or I'm rolling two dice. Because I was like, I can't decide. I want to play them all.
I think I work until 3:30 Wednesday, so if people get down there early, I'll be there.
I'll be leaving work. Unless I have some crazy work meeting, I plan to be leaving my job by 2:30.
I won't be able to leave super early, but I might be there by 4:30 is my hope.
I ended up accidentally acquiring like the Privateer Press bag with wheels, too, since I'm stuck in that Battle Foam system.
Yeah.
And I have almost all the models for Kador that I own packed up in both of those bags. And I've been dragging that around too.
Yeah, my ret case has everything in it except my Desters and my Dester Thane. I'm not saying they're unplayable,
but
I have
the Dester flowchart.
Yes, I put that in there because we talked about it last.
Oh, did you? Okay.
The Dester flowchart for what you can or can't do with a Dester is one of the most absurd things in the history of mankind.
I'm excited for the I guess the first rat is going to come soon because there's so many
by the end of the month. They said
there are so many goofy nonsense things. They're all minor things, but they're all like just.
Well, Scott has several because you have a model that can kill everything on the board, and then a model that literally can't use one of its rules.
Well. Convergence has a model that has two of them that counteract each other because the battle engine would get infinite attacks, except it's never allowed to put out servitors.
Right.
Alexia basically can buy a range tax currently and get like 21 gunshots.
Alexia can currently buy 20 gunshots because of the way the rules are written.
Sure.
And then there's a bunch of people with like Ricochet and Kane and some other casters.
The Ricochet rules,
both
Kane and the bigger problem is Madrak. Madrak can hit the same guy with his axe four times because he's got a reload, and it's got ricochet. So he's just like, axe. Did you live? No? Excellent. Game over. Because
you're never within X inches of yourself is no longer a core rule. Fair enough.
Yep.
There's all sorts of other quirky little things. Like two models, one model and like Menoth, another faction have the exact same rule, but it's worded differently in both places.
There's three models that have March.
Yeah,
there's Runewood and Rupert, and there's a troll.
Trolls don't have March, I don't think.
Yeah, there's a troll, either UA or solo, that has it. I forget which.
Sure.
But anyway, all three are worded differently. Rupert's is friendly, not friendly faction, and can affect warjacks. And then there's the troll one, which is, I believe, friendly faction, but can also affect beasts. And then the one in Signar is friendly faction and can't affect beasts.
And can't one caster fully heal because of can't Kane 2 be fully healed by a Merc solo currently?
Currently.
And all sorts of these goofy little things.
Well, then there's funny things that they probably won't errata but are humorous. So, for instance, you can use focus to stop the damage from backlash now because all it does is reduce the damage on a damage thing. So it's like one damage source, spend a focus. It's a horrible use, but you could prevent backlash damage. By that same argument, you could cut yourself with Scar for her feet and then block your damage, except the way it works is you cut yourself, you block the damage, then the amount of damage you took is the amount you actually get. So humorously, you can spend focus on Scar to have her feet be less effective if you'd like.
Okay.
And I don't think they'll get rid of that one, but there are some funny little interactions like that.
It's just your, you know,
the focus thing isn't for a damage roll. It's just anytime you take
a damage source.
Yeah, okay.
Well, there was also, I think
I've been busy. I didn't get a chance to read any of this stuff.
Another big one is the Swamp Gobbers can both make 5-inch clouds.
Yep.
And then I think this is not, there's nothing funky about the rule, but it's just like probably unintentional that you, now that the Trollblood Sorcerer is a weapon attachment, You can put three of them on the stone.
Yep.
And now you have a 14-inch stone bubble.
Yeah.
I mean, it cost 18 points to do it, but...
But it might be worth it, theoretically.
At least one of them. They're 5-wound guys. You can just have them tank in front of the front of the stone if you want to spend $65 or $68 but on...
This is just your normal weird...
And I mean some of it's going to stick around and some of it's not, but it is... There are some humorous things. Like, there's two or three different models that have both... The rule where on box they RFP, but if they destroy something, they get another attack. There are various different flavors of it, but there's like three or four models that all have it. So it's like...
It's a tactical choice.
Except you don't have a choice. The RFP is not optional.
Oh, if it's not optional, never mind.
Like, it's like Rengrave and a few others have a non-optional RFP, and then if they destroy something, it's like, okay.
Well, you know, proofreading's tough.
Proofreading's hard.
It's a lot of models, but yeah, but that'll all get taken care of. It's just, I'd be nice to see that first wave of variety.
Yeah.
And I think enough people know that certain things aren't meant to be that way.
Or the one that I'm really hoping, it better be an Inter-Rata, because if it's not, I'm going to be shocked and kind of upset, is currently Disruption prevents power-up, but does not prevent allocation, as worded. So you can't get your free focus at the start of the turn, but you can be fully loaded by your Warcaster if you're disrupted. What? And you can spend it.
I listened to another podcast that was
interviewing... How dare you,
Brian. I just have nothing else to do at work, so
all right, that's
I listened
fair.
To him. But they were talking to a staffer, I think Oz maybe, but they were talking to a staffer about the whole idea of within and completely within existing and how like it was just fucky. So I think they were talking about it as then within is an English term. And completely within needed to exist because within was also a game term.
Yeah.
So I think gain, we're used to it being a game term as opposed to allocation, but it's also like an English word. So
And so it's possible it's intended, but as explicitly worded, unless they add something to either the core rule or the disruption rule, which either one would be fine. But if they don't add it to either one as written, you can allocate.
I heard some back and forth things. This is all like rumor, but I heard Akira Sloane's feet may not be actually changing now.
Well, so several people claimed that they had seen the errata feet and what was going to be in the errata, and that this is the official errata. And several different sources reported it as the same thing and claimed they didn't get it from each other. I don't know if that's true, but that's what they claimed. And then everybody started talking like, well, this is the Kara Sloane feat. So everybody just play with this Kara Sloane feat on your local game night, because why would you play with the other one? The other one's dumb and obviously going to get eroded. Regardless of your opinion on whether it's dumb or not, PP has not officially eroded Kara Sloane. And one of the PP staffers went on the forum and got very... I think it was Will Schick, but I don't remember.
It was Hungerford.
Hungerford, okay. And went on the forum and under his official name was like, we have not said we're eroding Kara Sloane. No one said we're eroding Kara Sloane. Play her as she's written. And so one of two things is happening. Either A, she's actually not getting eroded, which, okay, that's their decision. I disagree, but it's their decision. Or B, she is getting eroded, and that post is going to look really silly in like a week.
I think it, based on like the way the leaks worked and the way that Privateer Press talked about or didn't talk about the leaks when they happened, I feel like somebody on staff talked to like maybe War Machine Elite, and then they ended up broadcasting it because
That's what they do.
And that was just another way of saying, God damn it, it's another fucking leak.
Yeah.
And then when people had the reaction to it that they did, where it's like, okay, Kara Sloane's existing feat currently is egregious, and this feat is worse.
Well, this feat is... It doesn't... So it fixes...
The new feat is stronger.
The new feat is stronger,
it's but definitely
that's what I mean by
it
worse.
It fixes the problem where you can shoot on top of one.
Except that's not actually a problem, because, I mean... Changing it makes it obscenely more powerful because they can boost the damage and everything. The only advantage that the pre-errata, if the errata thing happens, has is the fact that you can do it top of one. But
that's
you can mitigate
true.
That by blocking line of sight, by having terrain, by having shield guards.
The original feat also had the advantage that if you have models that can run but cannot walk into the back arc of a Warcaster, they could become more accurate.
Okay, because except they can boost in the new one, which is strictly better than a back arc bonus.
Guided fire boosts anyway.
Oh, okay, never mind that.
So it doesn't matter.
But whatever. Boosting damage is... I think the new feat would be stronger because any turn except the first turn,
it's
going to be better. And you can mitigate that first turn. And even unmitigated, somebody did the math, and that first turn thing only works like 25% of the time.
It was in the 30s for most.
It was in the 30s for most casters.
Okay,
but 30s for 30s is a lot.
If someone does nothing to mitigate, you lose your feet. No, don't shrug like that. Do you think you're only at a 30% chance to win any given game?
I played Rhett and Mark 2 every game. I had
there
a 30%
chance. There are some games where I would settle across from somebody and I'd be like, you know what? this is a bad drop. I think I'll take the 33% chance.
Okay, that's fine, but that's, I mean...
The mitigation thing, so, if you put your caster 2 or 3 inches back, well, that's terrible. My caster is forced to be farther back than I want him to be. I mean, I have a lot of shield guards on my list. I personally am not that worried by the way my lists are going to be built, but I don't think anyone should be able to have more than a 5% chance of killing someone on top of
one. You're right. It's dumb that it existed. I will never dispute that it's dumb that it existed, but people were acting like it was a 100% guaranteed, works every time.
Yeah. The problem was it's a 33% chance from 14 inches away from your whole army with a bunch of jacks that have really high defense.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's a 33% chance, and then you lose your feet, except even if they run their whole army forward, you probably just get to do it again the next turn?
Yeah. Well, you can only feet once.
You can't feet, but you can all still shoot again.
I think the other thing that's really important to think about is, like, aside from the Warcaster Warlock assassination happening, is that, like, if you have key parts of your army or solos that need to play forward, there's no mitigating that. They die. It just happens. If you have something in your army that's very essential to making it work the way it does, and you need to make sure that it's on the front line to make sure it works for you, it goes.
A good example in Rhett is Discordia. You need that like, if you're going to put him in the list, you're putting him in the list because you need that +2 armor bubble against ranged, especially against Karasloan. And he's slow enough that you don't really want him back off the front line. And if they've got, they have a much higher than 33% chance of just picking up Disco at 12-18. Like, he's just dead.
First of all, She? Disco's a she.
Is that true? Or
all the Discordia fluff says she.
Really?
Yeah. But anyway, it's a fucking feat. It should kill a heavy.
Not on top of one. I agree. I agree it should, but not on top of one.
But bottom of one? Sure. I mean, so if you move Discordia forward and then she immediately dies, Discordia, that's okay? Discordia can move forward
and put up her bubble and be a 12-20, and then she's much less likely to die.
But the other thing is, when you move on first turn, some of that can be attributed to Operator Aider because you had to do something that made that happen. But to sit there from a new player perspective, which Privateer Press wants many of with this edition, if they play against a Karasloan player, they do nothing. They have contributed to the game 0%.
Yes.
And have already started losing because of it.
Yeah, no, and that's, like I said, shooting into your deployment zone top of one should not exist at all. Like, I'm never going to claim that that's not true. That is an issue. But the new rumored feat is, from a competitive standpoint, much, much, much stronger.
It is, especially being able to cast Guided Fire for free.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Well, she could have cast Guided Fire, and then they got +2 from the feat before.
But now she gets 3 focus that she can allocate to Jax for boosting, which is
that's true.
Anyway, there's always so much
at any rate. My point is, I'm hoping there's an errata at the end of the month.
Exciting.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see it.
What are you guys going to be focusing on for the next few cap? What are your, like, I mean, obviously, Jeremy, you mentioned you're gonna be, you want to play all of them, but is there,
I want to play all of them. I would like to see some of the most changed casters, what they can do. And in my mind, those are Kalissa. Her gun with the shot types is amazing. Gareth got a huge, huge upgrade in this edition, and Ossian, because Deadeye is the pimp. So I didn't even choose. I let my opponent pick my list, but this last Wednesday I played Kalissa and I played Ossian, and I would have straight tabled my opponent if I had remembered that Kalissa's gun was as amazing as it was on every turn, because I sent a jack into one of his jacks at depth 13 and missed every single attack, then shot it while it was engaged in melee with that jack with Kalissa, and then a Hydra walked up and punched it to death, because it turns out when you're auto-hitting, everything kills everything.
Yeah.
Like, I just should have shot it first.
Always shoot first.
And then I played a game with Ossian versus Dan's Gareth list, and Deadeye in Rhett is patently unfair. Like, there is nothing about that spell that is okay in Retribution. I'm thrilled with it. I don't think they're going to take it away. It used to be a feat. It still is a feat.
Yeah.
On a different caster in the same faction. You know what's really awesome is when your Strike Force line up across the table from the opponent's Strike Force, and you both look at the table and you go, there is no way on earth any of your Strike Force live if I shoot you, and there's no way on earth you kill more than 3 of mine. Let's play this game. This will be fun. Because that's exactly what we did. I let him walk into stealth range and shoot at me, and I lost a guy. And then I walked into his range, and I shot his entire unit off of the table. And it was trivial. Like, it was just like, oh, Deadeye. And then I put Deadeye in the Nis Hunters, and one of them trivially shot a Mage Hunter Assassin off the table, and then the rest of them crippled Moros after walking forward. Because Deadeye is just not okay in Rhett.
Oh, because you can
see they're partisans.
But I mean,
I had to walk within 5 because of the stealth. Yeah, that particular list, I didn't have any stealth mitigation. And several people have told me that just take stealth mitigation riflemen that are then dead-eyed and just kill everything always before it ever gets anywhere near you, and they're probably right. Yeah, so those three I'm really excited about. I don't know if they're all three going to be the most amazing. There are other casters that are still going to be good. I think that Raven I might just never play because Ossian exists with Deadeye, and it just makes me sad.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate.
Because on his speed turn, it's cool. Fully boosted everything.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty okay. And then I got in a big fight on, well, not a fight, but a discussion on the forums about how I think Thyrin is just shitty Vyros too. And I like laid out all my reasons why. Like, they have very similar spells in a lot of ways. Like, the things they do are very similar. Like, they both have a defensive buff for their jacks. They both have a cool thing they give at either Bird's Eye or Flank, or Cleave, rather. They both do this. They both do this. They both murder in melee. They both have high defensive stats. And then I'd just rather have Bird's Eye and Synergy than I would rather have, than I would want to have Thyrin's feet and Cleave.
Sure.
Like, at the end of the day. So Thyrin and like, Raven are the two I'm not excited about.
He looks like the Guyver.
He looks kind of cool, but
he's the anime.
Thyrin and Raven are just probably not going to see a lot of play unless I'm missing something with them.
So, Nathan, what are you going to play?
I'm excited. I'm going to pick up Gators because, you know, my reason for not doing so doesn't exist anymore.
Some nice-looking Gators.
Probably, yeah. I'm almost certainly buying Brian's Gators.
I might keep wrong on Snapchat. I'm going to test them out this weekend.
That's fine. That's understandable. But, except they don't play. Oh yeah, they do play for Scorn. Duh.
Yeah, they have the they can't, since not being able to get shot is such a big deal in Mark III. Yeah.
The fact that he can cast Submerge and Starcrossed, the fuck.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm most excited for both directions to try cross racial things. Like I like.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Sturm and Drang have TK. And that's hilarious on the Gator Battle Engine.
Yep.
Because the only bad thing about the Gator Battle Engine is that it's slow, and going an extra 2 inches every turn gets it up there. And then, like, flip side is Caliban has Parasite and Occultation and Fury as well, or Rage.
He has some strength thing. But
point is, those three spells on a stealth prey unit is fucking amazing. And so he runs those guys, runs Brigands like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like fair. Like under him, Brigands are basically Rat 10, Pow 16, just monsters. So I'm excited about that.
That's pretty good.
Also, I'm never not playing Arcadius ever.
That's fair.
Like they took what I've always maintained is probably the best warlock in the game.
And made him better.
And they gave him Watcher and Tune Up. Yeah. And said, there you go. Oh, and made his feet easier.
Yeah.
So like, there you go. His
feet easier.
He can pick.
In his control area, he gets to pick frenzy targets. So all the positioning and line of sight shenanigans that I learned over the past several years.
Don't matter.
Don't matter once the lines clash. If you use it as an alpha strike device, you still need to because the target has to be in his control area.
Target has to be in control. Okay.
So if I'm going to shoot things out like I did against you in our one film and everything, like the alpha strike thing, you still need to make sure you can only see the enemy. But once the lines clash, if you're just using it for bonus attacks and shit, it's like, whatever, fuck it.
But you could just charge a friendly to get him up and... Oh.
Aww. Oh, but man... Tuning up two Roadhogs, just like boom, boom. Enjoy those assault sprays, boys.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so sexy. Shame they nerfed the Roadhogs, but everything else in Minions got baller better.
Yeah, Minions is nice. Gonna be amazing.
Like it's hard for me to even care about Convergence right now.
That's fair. Because they really didn't change at all. Other than
they changed almost nothing. They did a couple things that they needed to. Iron Mother's feet affects her balls now.
Sorry. Nice. But yes.
Yeah, because it used to just be Iron Mother's Mat and Rat become equal to her focus, right. Which meant that her jacks got it as well because
except
of how things work.
They had their own Mat Rat.
But her servitors are not jacks and did not have the XX ability. And so in Mark, that must have been on accident, I think. Because I then in Mark 3, they just said her battle group becomes
that makes sense.
Mat Rat 8.
That'd be fun.
But yeah, Minions all day long, give you some money, happy times.
Yeah, I finally made a bunch of lists. Because last week, my list I was initially making the first week didn't have many heavies, but now I think after I got to Origins one of the days or between time, I just sort of like got in this list making frenzy and, you know, whatnot, and now I have heavies everywhere, so now I have to try these different lists out with, you know, my Titan, all my different Titans, and all the different other types of heavies to see what goes on. I think I'll be playing a lot of Resheth, Xerxes 1, Naresh, Makeda 2.
Resheth.
Are probably be I think I have seven casters that I'm more interested in, but Resheth, Naresh, Morgul 2, really cool. Makeda 2 are the ones that are kind of at the top.
Your new caster looks new caster, pretty sexy. I think it was my second or third favorite of the new ones.
Yep, he's also, I'm going to try him out. The casters that I don't know when or why I'll be playing Morgul 1. His feat no longer affects Warcasters, Warlocks. That really hurts, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's rough.
I mean, I'm happy. I'm very excited to put 7 of my casters on the table, and that's still months of practice and play. And in 7-8 months, there may be other things. As I play 7 months of scoring in Mark III, things may open up for those other casters. But initially, I'm interested in 7 other Warlocks.
And by then, they'll have released Halloween Town as the new Hordes faction.
So we'll have that, and we'll have potentially getting closer to the theme forces, and those might open up other casters. But I mean, so I got 7 Warlocks to mess with for the next 6 months to a year.
Yeah, I'm also surprised at the frickin', of all the theme forces, why are Thornfall and Blindwater not yet, out there?
They're just playtesting everything. They had to release... the undead mercs, because they otherwise they weren't playable. They had to do a Cephalex, so
they weren't unplayable until we had the theme force and knew that we could only play them in the theme force.
I thought they said you could only play them in the theme force.
That's not at first.
Well, sure, but I mean, if the cards were going to come out and say can only be played in theme forces, then they had to release the theme force.
Sure.
But I
don't mind that they're playtesting things. I look forward to seeing them too. I am hoping that A, they will be more polished, than because there are less of them, and so they can put more time into polishing them. And I'm hoping, B, there will be greater parity across factions. Because when I looked at the theme forces for one faction versus another in Mark II, it was really disheartening.
I hope there's greater parity across factions in the game. Like, I mean, when scoring in Mark II, I'm like, oh, look, it's Krix. I'm probably going to lose. Like, I don't want to say that again. I don't think any faction should say that against any other faction.
I don't think any faction's going to say that against Krix anymore.
No, but that's fair. But I'm just saying, I mean, as good as Red is and as good as Signar is, I don't go, oh, it's Red. If it comes to the point where I can't beat a faction, I'm not playing the game.
Sure. Yeah.
But I mean, we have so much experimenting to do and things to find out.
Yeah, I think it'll be even if that is possible, it'll be a really long time before.
People might think that in the first month, but you got to play this for months, and you really got to see angles. And even if it's true short term, it's not a long. I mean, long term is what it would be.
And there are bandwagoners out there. Like, I think early tournaments in Mark III are going to see a lot of Rhett.
Correct.
Because a lot of people that played Krix because it was a power faction, for instance, now see Krix as not a power faction. Whether they're right or wrong, it doesn't matter. They see it that way.
Yeah.
Hey, and they're like, I'm out of Krix and I'm in on Rhett.
Their Bane Warriors get to stand up for free still.
Yeah, that's helpful.
Super good if you're against Kreos, I guess.
That's why I'm keeping wrong eye and Snapjaw, because they can't be shot. So they can just,
There you go.
They'll endure the Rhetts.
What are you playing with the looking forward to and the whatnot?
I've been playing a lot of just Kador is kind of what I've committed to for right now, but the thing,
I guess, trolls with Mandrak 2 being broken as fuck.
It feels like they really flipped a lot of things in Trolls, but Mandrak 2, like, it almost makes me want to go back just to play him until they decide to say he's not working as intended.
And by just to play him, I think you literally mean not even field any other army with him, because you need him.
Yeah,
you don't even need a list. Fielding just Mandrak 2.
Explain to me what I'm missing here. Like, he seems good, but I don't see
his feat is move and gain an attack.
Okay, Berserk and Overtake, sure.
And over here...
It is Berserk and Overtake, which is extremely important.
Where's
Every time he kills somebody, he gets a Fury.
Yeah, so he has infinite attacks.
Seems strong.
So he'll wipe out entire units, and given that he's PS-15, he's going to kill your heavies. Like, he'll have and 50 Fury, right? Because he'll kill a unit, and I'm like, I'm up to, like, I have 20 Fury on me. Oh, here's a heavy. Murder, 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 murder. He's dead. Now I'll go to this other unit and kill that unit.
Then you'll Warpath.
So if he berserks into 4 guys, he gets 4 Fury?
Yeah.
Because, Makeda 3 has, if she kills people, she gets a Fury.
Because this isn't Berserk. It's
each time it destroys a living enemy model, gets a Fury.
Because Makeda 3 has, if she does some sort of attack that kills 4 guys, she gets 1 Fury out of it.
One per. So his feat will have him berserking through a unit, and then if he ever misses, he just buys an attack, because if he killed 4 guys and misses the 5th, he has 4 extra Fury. He kills that guy, keeps Pac-Manning. When he gets to heavies, he just fucking kills them. And so his feat is he wipes out armies until he gets to a 5-inch gap that he can't cross.
Because Warpath.
And the new Grim Salvation is ridiculous, because it used to be non-optional, and it used to be just kill one of your guys.
Right.
Now it's choose a guy to be hit instead, and they get full normal effects. So what you do is you get a triangle of warders next to him, and somebody's like, drag you in with a mittens. And it's like the warder in back gets hit, doesn't move, and he's armor 22, so go fuck yourself. Shoot you with this. Don't care. That guy over there takes it. So he's wipes out entire armies, and he's borderline unkillable. So enjoy.
The other big thing the other big thing to realize about Grim Salvation also is that it changes the hit. So if you shunt something to a warder, you can shunt that to a bouncer if you think it's going to kill the warder.
Yeah, and the way the shunting works now, the whole AoE shunts. So if it's like a knockdown AoE, you're like, nah, it's over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an it's really interesting. I also really like what Kalandra does now with Fury 8 and the champions. But really, like, Kador's been fun for me. The thing I'm excited the most for it, though, is to get out of my list corners, because like right now with the way that power up works and how in the past with playing Kador, I felt so like focus strapped on my casters because they want to do a lot in the game, but my Jax really didn't like have the ability to get any benefit out of that. So right now I'm taking like Beast 09 a ton of times, Ruin a ton of times, and Behemoth in every list because they're so focus efficient. So when they get that extra focus for free, I get to do a lot more work with them. They manage themselves better.
Yeah.
But it's really making it hard for me to build lists because I have so many points tied up in Jax. Like, I built a Strakoff list that legitimately has Behemoth, Beast 09, and Torch in it.
Oh.
Because it's just baller as fuck.
Yeah, after 2 months of playing 75 points, I may have to... I mean, I kind of want to see somebody mess and run a 100-point tournament at some point.
I know. I really want to... 85 seems like it could... If I was playing 85 points, I could get there and play the list I want to play.
My 14 Vanguard list takes 150. 148, to be exact. But my 14 Vanguard list is... I was trying to figure out what 75 points is in the new one.
Yeah.
I don't think it's 150.
So I have an Excel that translated everything... I used to instead of War Room back in the day. And so all I did was update the army points, the costs, and the war deck points for my casters, and then just looked at what the costs were. All of my ret lists broke down to go from 50 to 75 almost exactly, unless I was shorting myself on war deck points. The only way they didn't was that. So the translation seems pretty clean.
You weren't here last week, and you didn't listen to the podcast because you're not crazy, right?
Correct.
So I need to harass more people, and you're a judge, so you can hear this. Travis, ignore me. So a lot of the casters...
Maybe he has you on ignore, too.
Yeah, I know. So warjack points, you know, range from 27 to 31 for the most part.
Sure.
A couple people like Kaya 2 with Laris, and people that have things are at 24. Makeda 3 has her unit, so she's at 24.
Sure.
And Makeda 2 is 24, which I'm going to go with it's a typo until I hear otherwise. I just think that Makeda 2 is supposed to have 3, because Makeda 1 is 29. So you go 29, 24, 24, and I think
the 24 one doesn't gain the first of those doesn't gain a unit.
Correct. I think there was some crossover that they were making. They were moving stuff around, and it's driving me fucking nuts. I know. At the end of the day, if that's what it's supposed to be, it's what it's supposed to be. But other caster that has everyone who has 24 has other things. Like 27 is typically the lowest you go if you have nothing else.
What was her points in Mark II?
She was 6. I mean, she was same. Yeah. Makeda 1, Makeda, they're all basically the same thing. It's just really weird.
That is weird.
And you're a lot judge.
They did a lot of flattening. I don't know why Ron's a 26. Ron is significantly lower than the rest of Rhett for no reason. Well, he used to be high.
Yeah, and I can see. I mean, even 26 would be weird, but 24.
24 is really low. Really low, I agree.
And I don't understand why. And, you know.
Well, compare that to some of the casters who are, like, heavies on their own. Like,
Karchev.
I just looked at Chromak 2 also. Yeah. Chromak 2 is 28 beast points, and Karchev is 30.
Yeah, I don't know why Karchev's 30. That one blows my mind a little.
Yeah, it's crazy. I love it. I certainly do. But, when Makeda 2 comes...
Jordan Bouchois tells me Karchev's terrible in Mark 3.
Karchev's amazing, and if he doesn't play them during WTC, I sure as shit will. I already have a full...
Are you guys on a team together?
Yeah.
So that's the one limitation. It's just we can't cast everything else.
Yeah, well... Currently, and maybe I don't know if you want to talk about this or not.
Post-Mark 3 release rules should be out this week. Travis is finalizing them now.
The thing that I'm worried about is the character variant. I'm sure if we're just playing straight Steamroller, that's usually what we do. But I think the big one right now is casters cannot be the same exact.
I believe that is the case.
There's a possibility of characters.
I think that the only variant we're doing off of vanilla is Death Clock.
Yeah.
Okay. So since character restriction is not standard anymore, I don't believe it'll be the case.
Yeah, it's not.
Which
it's
makes sense.
Yeah.
But because it's the WT format, we still have to be, the casters are the one thing you can't duplicate.
You can't duplicate the same exact casters. So
which is fine.
You can play the first and second incarnation.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. Yeah. But the literal identical caster.
Just check.
Well, Jordan because and... even without character restriction, you were never allowed to do like two. Awesome. Ron one list,
sure.
You know, even if you're allowed to have Iris 2 in both your lists, you weren't allowed to do Ron as a single player.
Sure.
And so the team event, it's just 10 lists versus two lists, that core rule is still a thing.
Okay, that makes sense. I'm fine with that.
The other thing I've been excited for is the new Battlebox caster for Kador. I know, like, when I first looked at him, it felt like they kind of took all of the Kador casters, put them in a bowl, and, like, scrambled them, and then that's how he got his spells. Like, he's got Fury and Tactical Supremacy and a few other things that give Pathfinder and Steady. But I've been really enjoying, like, that combined with his feet has just been really interesting, and he does work on his own, so, like, but once again, my problem is my favorite list I've built for him is one goddamn point over.
I hate that so much. When you build a list, you're like, this list is everything I want, it's perfect, and I'm just at a point. I mean, a point is even more ridiculous now than it was before, and you're like, you take out any piece and the whole part just starts, it all starts crumbling on top of itself.
You doing, like, shock troopers with him?
No, actually,
what I'm... Because Tax Supreme and his feet seem to make those guys shine. Like, you Tax Supreme them while they're in Shield Wall, there. And then Fury and feet, and the world explodes.
I've been liking Irusk 1 with shock troopers a lot more, mm-hmm. but what I've been really digging on him is the fast, hard-hitting force of, like, the reason why my points are fucky is because I have... a full unit of Ulans with their solo and a full unit of regular pikemen with their UA. And then on him, I have the two efficient jacks of Beast 09 and Ruin, and then Andre is with him with Juggernaut because his feat doesn't specify battle group.
Right.
So, and then the 1 point difference is fucking Silas. I need 4 points for him. I only have 3 because he's got 2 solid upkeeps. He wants up every 3. Single turn. Yeah, the third one is optional.
Which one are you counting optional in that list?
I count Tactical Supremacy and Fury as must-haves.
I count Pathfinder Steady as a must-have.
But in my list where I've got pikemen Ulans that charge for free, or that have the Pathfinder on the
charge.
Or Ruin, who's got Pathfinder.
Okay, you have a lot of Pathfinder in that list. That's
so
true.
It's optional for me, but, like, those two are the big ones. Six? So, and with him being a midline caster, I'd rather have him camp. So Koslov is... just cool. Like, he's super legit, but I really am curious to see if variance and points are going to come out. Like, is the 85 list going to be a thing, or will there be
kind of like how the 42 is a thing?
Yeah, or will there be tournaments that give you, like, a 1 or 2 point leeway? Because I've also built I built 5 point under lists, and Steamroller is only 4 points. And that
it lost 5 under.
No, the core rulebook says 5,
but Steamroller says 4. I missed that.
I haven't read through all the rules. I mean, I know there's been some discussion on some of the scenarios, but it looked fairly the same. It didn't look too different.
The only thing that I've heard complaints about, I'm not even sure I have a problem
Linebreaker,
with it,
is Linebreaker. People don't like. It's a lot of new incursion. Yeah.
There's a
incursion. I mean, as far as the thing that everybody hates, Linebreaker is the new incursion.
Linebreaker and incursion definitely shouldn't have existed in the same packet. I'll give them that much at least. But the thing that I have a problem with the Steamroller packet right now is that a lot of the new scenarios don't feel very live.
In general, I would say that compared to Steamroller 2015, the scenarios feel less live. I will also say that I felt that the scenarios were much more live in 2015 than in 2014. And I don't know that I think these are more live than they were in 2014. I think it's in between the two, and I'm not
you
sure
mean
if
less
I...
live.
Yeah, I think that 2014 was less live than this is. I think 2015 was more live than this is.
Also
and I'm not sure I have a problem with it being in the middle. I haven't decided, though.
When it's less live, gun lines are better. When they're live, spam lists are better.
Correct.
So you get this, and not right now, everyone wants to play gun lists because of Mark III. So you have the desire to play the amazing new gun lists. Then on top of that, you have Steamroller with more dead
encouraging
scenarios,
you to play gun
which
lists.
Which even makes you the gun list,
like,
better.
Lilith 2 isn't Lilith 2 anymore, so I'm just going to say Kaya, because that's Lilith 2 Part 2. But, or not Kaya, Kara Sloan.
Kara
Sloan loves the crap out of the fact that the scenarios are less live. I know, because I played Lilith 2 in Mark 2, and there were certain scenarios that were just a real problem for me.
But if your gun lining aren't... Well, I mean, Linebreaker, the things you can contest are super deep.
Sure.
But, like, something like the pit, like, with a gun, like, you need to get in there. Right?
Not really?
You barely have to get in there.
The thing is, even my gun line lists have to have 2 jacks in ret because of the way the points work out.
Sure.
Maybe it's a light and a heavy, but it's usually 2 heavies. If what I have to do is shoot a third of your army off the table, run one of my heavies into the zone, and then you manage to kill that one heavy and score a point, and then I shoot another 30 of your list off the table...
You're never shooting Wrong-Eyed Snapjaw off the table, bitch.
Suck it, motherfucker!
Yeah, Wrong-Eyed Snapjaw, toe in that zone!
Boom.
And you ain't doing dick about that.
Except they gave ridiculous threat extension in Mark III, so I probably just have one of my jacks go kill you. But
what's its mat?
sixes.
So four. Matt, four is not killing me.
Starcrossed is a drag.
Yeah, Star-crossed bitches. High five again. Voodoo Gators, motherfucker.
I might actually be trying out Freddy Scouts, too, because under Rashes' feet, you know, he does minus two armor, minus two defense, yeah. And suddenly I'm shooting some armor-piercing shots across the board.
Ooh. That Efreet Scouts seem like they gained a lot out of this edition just based on the armor-piercing rule. I don't think they changed
the
much.
They changed, like, not at all.
The armor-piercing rule is a big deal. Heavy rifle team's probably going to start seeing play. And it's not just because they got a one bump in POW.
Kind of speaking of Efreet Scouts, just because I always field them together because they did a similar thing. But holy fuck, like, somebody in Privateer Press likes Alton Ashley.
Yeah.
Because Alton Ashley's just like, I'm the best.
That's the...
holy shit!
I'm not sure what's going on with Alton Ashley, but he is the most auto of all auto in
Cleveland. He should work for Scorn.
With the Kator stuff, like I stated earlier before we started casting, every list starts out with Widowmaker Scouts, Kel Bellock, and a Widowmaker Marksman.
Yeah.
But now it's just I have to, with that package, take Alton Ashley.
Yeah.
Because if I don't, and you're I just come across the... Yeah, I need to have
that. I haven't looked at him closely.
He's the same, but they gave him Grievous Wounds.
Oh, yeah. Well, so like, and now I am a D3 plus 3 instead of D6.
Instead of D6, it's D3 plus 3, and he has Grievous Wounds, which is like, fuck your spirit.
Yeah, D3 plus 3, he still has Prowl, he got Reposition 3, Grievous
Wounds. He used to have Kill a Guy move, now he just has Reposition, so he always gets to move. And then, they gave him Grievous Wounds.
And he's still a range 14, POW 12.
And with 7 other sniper shots, not including Iris, and one of those doing 6 damage...
Yeah. And that's why with Efreet Scouts,
with two attacks,
I called my the list that had him and the Efreet Scouts was I called it the Spirit Breakers because that's what it was. Just like if I saw Hordes, I fielded these guys and your beast just sucked. And just with Grievous Wounds, holy.
And Grievous Wounds work on Jax now. Like it does. I wasn't questioning. I was stating. Yeah, it's bad.
And it doesn't even have to break armor. It just has to hit, which is really a really big deal. I think in general, Hordes players do have a reason to be mopey about some of their stuff, and I think that's like. When I saw how prevalent Grievous Wounds was with trolls and them being so reliant on healing, I just kind of backed away a little bit.
Yeah, it's hard.
One interesting thing is that because even though, what am I trying to say? The increase in War Beast points and Warjack points caused War Machine players to bring more Warjacks, but it caused Hordes players to bring more infantry.
Mm-hmm.
Because they already had to bring more beasts, so it actually just kind of gave them a refund on that so that they could buy more non-beast stuff, where it was the reverse for War Machine, because it forced them to buy War Jacks.
I think the problem is that across the board, and I don't know how well they achieved their goal, but across the board they were trying to make the question between beasts and infantry more of a question in Hordes.
Yeah.
And the way they decided to make that a question was to make the beasts worse, not to make the infantry better.
They tried to make cheap, crappy heavies a thing.
They did try to do that.
Let's make like really cheap, like goats. Yeah, they cost nothing and they're really terrible. Okay, so I'll just not take them then.
Talk about seriously.
Like, the Earthborn is, you could spam the crap out of it, like you could, but why would you? He's POW 15, he doesn't get to steal your weapon anymore.
I think you drank the beer.
He's a great scenario piece. He's a great scenario piece.
Straight
right?
into you. Like, both of you right
now.
He toes
the zone. Between this. I don't want to...
The bouncer is half the points and does the same fucking thing.
He's less hits, though.
A whoop-dee-dick.
Yeah, he's got a shield. The funny...
But yeah, no, the Earthborn, like, that's
Helga
the thing.
Got a shield. I think Helga's the first warrior model. Like, she actually has the shield weapon quality.
I think she's definitely the first warcaster that has it, but I know the Dracoon has a shield now, too.
Sure, okay. So, but in Mark II, I don't think anybody did.
No,
they just factored it into their armor.
It was just in their armor, yeah.
But, yeah.
But yeah, like, that's the thing, is they try to make these cheap heavies. And the thing is, like, for Red, it's the Sphinx, right? It's a 13-point heavy that still hits pretty hard, which is great. And but the difference is between a Sphinx and, for instance, the Earthborn, mine costs 2 points less, and I hit at a 17, not a 15.
And yours
and I have an in-faction trivial way to make it a POW 19.
Yeah, but it's not immune to all elements and unmovable.
It's unmovable in certain lists.
Sure.
But like, that's the thing. Like, I compare... Like, every time someone talks about the cheap heavies in Hordes now, I compare it to the Sphinx. I'm like, well, mine's cheaper, roughly the same boxes, and better.
And my gun
is amazing.
To the Juggernaut, and that's it.
Oh, like, yeah. Then it's just
A Mat 7 Jack for 12 points that crit freezes and has two attacks.
When I look at my Rhinodons and Arcanons, which are 12 points, they don't
hold up at
it
all.
Doesn't, yeah. It doesn't compute.
Yeah. Yeah, it's yeah. not the same.
And they didn't do that as much to War Jacks. They didn't, like, here's heavies that are cheap and shitty. They're like, here's heavies that are cheap.
Amazing. And good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas, like, you look at the Mauler, and he took a little bit of a hit on the chin.
Yeah.
But the Earthborn, they just, like, the Earthborn and Janessa getting hit equally, just one or the other, like, it really
I've thought about it a little more.
They nerfed the Roadhog.
I actually thought about it a little bit after our last cast. We talked about the Earthborn a little bit last time, and I decided I don't even have a problem with most of the changes they made to him. The problem is that he didn't get a pow bump when they took away his take your weapon rule.
Yeah.
They gave the Rhinodon a spiny growth, but lowered his armor.
Did they lower his fury too? Did he go down to fury 3?
I'm looking at him right now.
Whereas when you compare to, like, the Rhett side of the table, you have, like, Ron, who's like, oh, they took away his force barrier, but they made him innately defense plus one. And everyone's like, oh, well, he's one less defense against shooting. I said, no, he's not. He's plus three defense against shooting now because you can just take Hulk hands and affect him.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't, he still has force barrier.
He still has force barrier.
But he has plus one defense.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. There's some weird stuff that I want to give Privateer Press credit for making the addition what it is now. It's making me think about the game in a whole different light. But there are a lot of things where I just want to be like, has Washington legalized weed too and PCP? Because some of these things they're coming up with, the interactions don't make sense to me.
I think it goes back kind of like to what I was saying about the Fantasy Flight guys, is that the designers don't play the game the same way players play the game.
Yeah, we discussed that too in Bearmoon one night. We had talked about how, like, Privateer Press probably playtested the game the way they wanted it to end up.
Mm-hmm. Like, in Mark 1 and Mark 2, they probably never pushed an enemy model.
Mm-hmm. A friendly model.
Yeah, they probably never pushed a friendly model.
I guarantee it.
Like, push existed as a guaranteed way to get a guy who was towing the zone out of the zone, mm-hmm. right? I mean, sure. Wait, you can push your own guys? Well, of course I could fucking push my own guys. You didn't say I couldn't.
And then when people started triggering synergy off it, it blew their minds wide open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wide open.
Boom. You figured out any freaky Mark III things? The two, not this, but as far as tactical supremacy, not supremacy, tactical shenanigans. Like, the two I've seen now, there's the new one they're calling Biscuiting, because the guy who thought up his name's Biscuit or something on the forums. But, like, if you have Beatback or a Repulsor Shield or something, you move 99.99999% out of something's front arc into its back arc, and you smack it with its Repulsor Shield, and then, like, hey, plus two mat, and then stab it in the back of the head. You can do the same thing with Beatback. You know, you're like, ah, boom, I'm in your back arc now, go fuck your mother, and just smash it down.
Yeah, that's kind of amazing.
Yeah. And then the other one is the bullshit about two-handed throws not deviating if something's out of range.
Yeah, well, that came up twice in two games for me, where Jason, like, did his thing, and I walked up and I said, all right, I have this jack, and just so you know, if you put Scar there, I win the game. And he's like, well, I don't think so. And I was like, no, so here's what happens.
I throw at something.
I knock that jack down, and then I pick up any model in my army, and I target that behind you, or I target you from further away, like from exactly as far away as I can throw. I target you so that it won't reach you, but it'll clip in front of you.
Yeah.
I hit you automatically. And he's like, what? I was like, yep, that's how that works now.
Yeah, that's probably the one thing that I think is the weirdest.
Out of range not deviating is, like, they tried to streamline it.
Yeah.
But
or directly away not deviating. Like, directly away is easier to trigger, quite frankly. You just line up so that you're throwing directly at your target and you go, I just throw that direction. Yeah. I hit you.
Yep.
I cannot miss. I could be a half inch away, but I can't miss. But you and I can't deviate.
You just have to put the thing you want, your own thing you want to throw.
Right? You just have to line up the way you're going to throw the thing. So you have two.
Or if they have a random, like, if they've got Reinhold behind their caster. You know, you position yourself.
You can see him.
You position yourself, sure. Which, I mean, if you're a large base and their caster's small base, you can see around their caster.
Yeah.
You know, you position your throw 6 inches away from their caster and go, I throw at Reinhold. He's out of range.
It doesn't
even
have to be 6 inches because remember,
whatever
same
half
size
strength is,
same size model stop. So if you throw a small base model, it hits their caster. You can't miss.
That's right. Same size model stop.
It is the weirdest. Default rule that I think is odd.
Yeah, the way they changed 200 throws, they tried to make it simple, and I think they made it incredibly abusable. And not all factions
especially
are going to
care. Especially with pre-measuring.
That's
what turned
pre-measuring made it trivial. And it's not that it's a bad idea to try to make two-hand throws less complicated, because they were horrific. But I think
combining the two types of throws into one thing, you know, was
yeah, it was great. Good. I think you're going to see a disgusting amount of tournaments won because they're going to clear out one thing in front of your caster, and then they're going to throw a thing at your caster, and then they're going to win the game. Like, I think it's going to happen a ton. And maybe I'm skewed by playing a ranged faction, but that means only Legion and Rhett and Signar and Kador are going to win that way, I guess. Because, I mean, even a Bombard can hit a guy that's knocked down.
You should. Yeah. I have some. You're gonna. Scorn's gonna have some pretty.
Scorn's actually range. Got some legit guns in Mark III. Yeah. So, but my point is, like, everyone's gonna be doing it. Like, just everybody. And you don't even need two hands. You can throw exactly where you want to with one hand. You just don't get an extra dice on the strength check.
Yeah, and if you're something like a Kator heavy, that's got your high win. Strength.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Especially if you're throwing a small base model, like you said. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I haven't found anything weird. I haven't been thinking about the game so much on that level as I have been just trying to, like, nail down my list and, like, what do I want to play and how do I want to beat people? And that answer usually comes to, I want to overrun a Beast 09 onto your caster.
I do find I'm running a lot less support in Rhett than I... Like, I feel like there's a lot of support options in Rhett.
I'm going as light on support as
possible. But I'm playing very little support in Mark III.
I'm finding... Mm-hmm. A couple of my lists even have Pangivers. I'm like, I just want things that can do things. If it's support, I doesn't have a role.
I will say that depending on which casters they put on the whatever it's called list.
Is it ADR?
ADR.
They did release season 4.
Did they release who they were?
Yeah, it's a bunch of prime casters. I can't remember which ones exactly, but they're kind of going back to basics with the new ADR. Okay. I don't know. I'll try.
How many points was it, and do they share? Because the rumor was they were going to share a single pool. And I haven't seen the ADR document.
What are you talking about?
The rumor was that the new ADR document, instead of having, you know, list one has ADR options, list two has ADR options, you have a pool of ADR options that both lists can draw from.
Well, it would be in the Steamroller packet. Yeah, well, all the
books came out, all the rules.
It uses the standard specialist, because I thought ADR didn't use the standard specialist rule. Yeah.
Well, they have the champions out, that those rules are, I haven't looked at the rules for champions yet, so I have no opinion.
I guess champions is the ADR.
Champions is basically exactly what we thought it was, but the only thing that we didn't think it was is that the rules were written for a large tournament or a large venue, but we can still use them at local levels and they can.
Okay, but champions is basically just play an ADR caster.
Yep, ADR
champions
caster,
is mandatory ADR. You get no benefit. It's just you have to play them. And then the current version of ADR, I think that's what you're just saying. It's only if something comes out at Gen Con a week later, it's not out, right? You know, it's only out during the convention where it comes out. It's just like street date models.
Right. Yep.
You can play them at Gen Con, but then you go home and
which
play
is
in a local tournament.
Instead of like the new caster just running over ADR.
It is
six
when
months.
You get like Chromac 2 or something like that.
So my thought is, since this room is 195 degrees, we should do recommendations to be done before I die.
It is really warm in here.
It is fairly
unless people have some more thoughts, Mark III, I'm just thinking I'm about to die.
I do, but I'm happy to talk about them next time.
We can get naked and or open a window.
We also haven't had Andy's input on any of this stuff too, so I wouldn't want
which we'll have next
and by the time we podcast he's
how
back
we've been recording like an hour and a half
about, 20 minutes yeah so about
all right we'll go into recommendations sure.
And
we didn't get any zappy grumbles
by the time we
tweet it
if we record
no, we had some from last week but we hit most of it
we
hit most of it
fine
a lot of them are Mark III questions and who would you rather have sex with me or Brian
yeah
the right answer is both
it is especially George R.
Sure.
R.
Yeah.
This is book.
We can
there is a nice awkward moment. I'll say this. One other thing with that anecdote, and you can tell when interviewers don't do their research. So King mentioned that, you know, writing runs in his family because he writes and his wife writes and both his kids write. And he mentioned that his dad actually had written a few novels that never got published, whatever. And so Martin, later on, he's talking about speaking of writing, blah, 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 and like kids falling in your footsteps. Did you encourage your kids to write, or did you try to push them out of it because you didn't want them to have the same difficulties you did before you got successful? And did your dad encourage you to be an author? And if you go to the Stephen King event, you're a diehard Stephen King fan, so you are probably aware of what Martin apparently was not aware of, which is that Stephen King's dad abandoned his family when he was 2 years old and he hasn't seen him since then.
Yeah.
So you maybe just check Wikipedia on the guy you're interviewing before you just said, "No, how'd your dad do? I don't fucking know. He left."
Yep.
It was a very awkward moment. Raylene has the cello version of the Game of Thrones music as a text message alert.
Okay.
And it makes Kaya go insane.
I imagine it would. Kind of made me twitch a little bit.
Speaking of which, who let the dogs out?
Who?
I recommend Gone with the Blast Wave. It is a webcomic, and it's fucking amazing, and it's not technically dead. He just updates about once every year or two. But, so it's, you know, you can marathon it, and it's really good. That's all.
I started watching a show. This show was on Cinemax. It's actually done. There's like 4 seasons. It's called Strike Back. I think back in the day, Jimmy even referred to it. It's like pre-Banshee. It's like Banshee, but instead of being more about a small town and more about fighting and with fisticuffs, it's more about like terrorists and fighting with guns. But it's just your standard Like your late night Friday show, intense violence, intense nudity.
I thought it was softcore porn because the only thing I heard about it was like this week here's the 57 nude scenes from Strike Back.
So there's that. But the thing about the Cinemax shows that make them fun is the violence is still good. And the character, like the writing is smart enough and it's really fun. The characters like just have that right sense of cockiness that you just kind of like want to watch and be more ridiculous. And it's just got, when you combine violence and cockiness and nudity, you just got yourself a hit. And really, because I mean, that worked so good for Banshee, that worked so good for Spartacus. I mean, some of these shows, you just combine those elements and it's
Rome.
Rome. I'm only in season one, so maybe the show gets terrible, but I've really been enjoying what I've watched of it. So, I know Jim watched a bunch of it and he really liked it back in the day.
There you go.
No, I got a two-parter, but it's easy. So, like, the first one's blatant. Orange is the New Black, new season.
I don't watch any of that show.
Well, the thing is, I've watched
10-minute clips of it.
I really thought this one was going to peter off. Like, I was like, this is the one that's really going to suck, right? But it's just fantastic. Like, they push the envelope in every episode where you're just like, you expect something to happen. Because, like, that's just the way this flows. Like, shitty thing happens, but then even shittier things.
So it is a wholesome girl who gets sent in jail in season one, turned like some kind of kingpin in jail, and she's just, like, ruthless, evil person by the end of it. Is that what's happening? Or is she still all, like, nice and friendly?
They broke her a little bit.
All right.
So she's been broken back down.
Do we still get to see Donna's boobs?
I haven't seen Donna's boobs yet, but there's some really fun stuff that happened.
Well, you've seen that?
Yeah, they were in
those. They were literally the first 10 seconds of the show.
Not in this season.
Okay. I thought, wasn't she not in season two, but she was in the rest of my life? I thought she was, like, gone for
a while. There's one where she got out of jail for a very short period of time and then came back.
Like, she didn't want to be in the show anymore, but then she's like, well, the show's popular. Maybe I should be on the show some more.
Yeah, I think it's
back in jail. People love it. I just haven't got into it, and it's one of those weird things that, you know, I watch all this TV.
At first, I didn't think I was going to enjoy it because I'm like, woman prison. It's like, that should be a soap opera, right? But then, like, think of, like, HBO's Oz, which I really enjoyed, and, like, multiply
less
that by
penis,
5 million.
More vaginas. So you're like, boom.
I know. Like,
speaking of Oz, have you fucking seen J.K. Simmons now?
Yeah, I thought that was a joke picture.
I did, too. It's not.
He's just, is he for a movie role?
Except it still doesn't make sense, because the movie role is apparently in the next Batman movie, he's going to play Commissioner Gordon. And I look at the Commissioner Gordon from the Batman movies that just happened, and he wasn't built like the fucking Terminator.
Yeah, he was crazy. Oh, yeah. I have to also, I'm going to jump in with a second recommendation.
No, you do it.
Outcast on, I think it's on Cinemax as well. It's like a horror scene.
We know how Brian spends his evenings.
It's basically about possession and demons and all this thing. It's very creepy. It's like that one show on Netflix, but good.
Hemlock Grove.
Yeah,
this show is great.
This is all about like demon. This is all about like demon possession. It's really creepy. Yeah. I'll talk to you about it later. Anyway, sorry, you can go back.
My last part is like the one that I actually have been spending a lot of time with is like those fucking Kador extremes. Jesus Christ, are those fun to convert? Like, I ended up taking like Marauder arms, the little piston arms with the shovels on them, and turned them into legs. They're too long, but I'll fix it. But man, it's really fun to mess with those. Like while I was driving,
not too long here, if you want to like ATST, like really tall guys.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about putting a little loincloth between there to make it look like it wasn't as bad.
So just use one of the Marauder arms and put the loincloth hiding it, and have that be not the leg.
I can try that. I'll take it into
consideration.
That's
his piston, baby.
But on that same note, if anybody out there is a Chaos Space Marine player, send me fucking chains and skulls. God damn, I've taken my Kador to Grimdark. I can't stop now. I put a severed head on one of them, the one that Gorshade holds, that little trencher precursor head.
Yeah.
And I can't stop. I understand GW's preoccupation with skulls and chains. I'm addicted.
Because you're a 12-year-old boy.
I just can't stop. I'm just like, oop, too little. I ordered a second Gorshade arm so I could mirror the severed heads underneath the shoulder pads of this juggernaut.
I have the Gorshade with the dice he's holding.
Yeah, that it's not a severed head. That's my recommendation. Kador Extreme.
It could be if there's a race of die-headed people.
It could be. Well, if Privateer Press is trying to get all the Malifaux players to play Halloween Town, that Halloween Town will happen.
There you go. My recommendation is actually something I just thought of this evening.
Before you do that, I want to recommend Gone with the Blast Wave again.
You already did.
I know. That's why I said again. It's what the word means. But I just really feel like there wasn't much of a reaction. And I want to push it harder because the artwork's great and it's funny and it's amazing. And you should all fucking read it.
Right.
Okay.
You're done.
Fair enough.
So anyway, I might recommend it again.
You might.
You can go ahead in the meantime. Go first.
Is anyone?
So anyway, Katie and I got talked into buying a quarter portion of a cow this last year, and it's been amazing. I have never had steaks that were this good in my entire life.
The weird thing is,
the hamburger is better than most steaks.
It was literally just like a cow's leg. They didn't actually cut it up for the meat. They just gave him like a
We had a buddy that like bought a quarter cow last year, and I was like, how'd you get in on that? They were like, oh, well, someone I work with slaughters a cow each year. I was like, well, do they have a spare quarter?
Like, a cow that's so, like, does he own them or pay for it? He just wanders into his steak and just kill a cow.
He owns them. But so I was like, do they have a spare quarter? And she was like, well, yeah. I was like, well, I'll get in on that. And it wasn't cheap, but I mathed out like what it cost me, not counting like I had to buy a freezer to store it and stuff, but like not counting that, I basically paid for the, I think it's literally like 100 pounds of hamburger. It's an absurd amount of hamburger. And then just as a bonus, I got like 30 of the best steaks you've ever had in your entire life.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
you buy in bulk, it's cheaper.
Like, I mean, it's cheaper than it would be at the grocery store, and I've literally never eaten steaks this good.
Was it still in, like, he joked that it was, but I wouldn't double check. Was it still in, here's a quarter of a cow had they butchered it down?
I paid for my quarter of the cow to the owner of the cow, and then I paid an additional $120 or $150 or whatever to a processing plant to turn it into sirloins and ribeyes and et cetera, and hamburger and what have you. And you can pick different sizes and different cuts and whatever you want. And it's amazing.
It sounds like cool, but me and Jordan, we got a freezer, but then we were too lazy to turn it on.
The hard part, you have to remember, the only hard part is because you've got it in a deep freezer, like even if you pull it out the morning before the you almost have to pull it out the morning before the next night.
Yep.
Like if you pull it out at dinner time,
yeah,
expecting it to be ready for dinner the next day, you have to put it on the counter. But if you pull it out like breakfast time and then you want it the next night, it's perfect.
Sure.
Yep. My family did that a little bit here and there. There's a guy in the Dells who did pigs and cows.
Oh,
and
man. I would totally.
Ew. Was he arrested?
Exactly. He was. I mean, like, we made fun of him in high school, too. But no, that's like the best thing. The best way to do it is just get yourself like a chest freezer or. I have a stand-up freezer in my garage that I've been meaning to fill once I get the chance to, of just like buying, even if you buy a full cow slaughtered, like that's still like, well, the more you buy, the better a deal you
get. Katie and I are talking that next year we'll buy a half. Yeah. Like a quarter was great. And the only problem with a half is I'm going to literally have so much hamburger that I'm going to come to podcast and just throw it at you guys.
Well, I might want to buy a piece your half.
Yeah.
So he'll buy an eighth.
I'll have an eighth of your meat. The only problem you have is who gets the tongue.
I requested not the tongue. You can say I don't want it, and I did.
That's not bad.
Tongue's really good.
I didn't want it.
You should.
I did.
Next time you do it, you should get the tongue. It's really good.
Well, I'd have to pay extra for it, because out of the four people, only one person can have the tongue.
Gotcha.
And I didn't want to pay extra for it.
I do remember when my dad first got his first slaughtered cow, I slapped my brother with this thawed-out tongue, and he threw up immediately. Well,
no, if you go to a good... When we go to Taqueria Guadalajara, because I don't think any of you guys have ever gotten around to going there with me. We should go... We'll go at some point. But they have tongue as one of their meat options.
I've had tongue. I've literally eaten tongue before. I just wasn't going to pay extra for it.
Gotcha.
It would have been like a significant amount of money to get the tongue out of the four. And the other thing is, what my buddy wound up doing, because he had so much ridiculously absurdly amount of hamburger, is he got a meat dryer and made jerky.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing jerky. He brought it to work, and I was like, this is fucking amazing. I don't know that I have the patience or the energy to make jerky, but it turns out you can make chili and spaghetti all winter off of a quarter cow. I don't know what we're going to do with the hamburger from a half cow, but...
Well, you just said you'd,
Well, you invite
people. I'm going to throw many people. Yeah.
I will take all of Jeremy's.
But yeah, I mean, normally Katie and I have gotten into that like healthy thing where you buy like the 95% lean hamburger.
Oh, that's
this
terrible.
This stuff is not 95%
lean. Do not do that.
It's delicious.
Do not buy 95% lean cow.
Well, the problem is when
80-20 is a good spread.
80-20 is good for hamburgers, but like when we make like spaghetti or whatever, if you put just the hamburger and it's 95% lean, you don't have to drain it at all.
When I make hamburger helper, I do the 95. When I do like burgers, I've
yeah, burgers. You want that, and this stuff does make amazing burgers. Like it is truly amazing. But it makes amazing everything. Like it's just, it's delicious. It's anyway, that's my recommendation: buy a quarter or a half or an entire cow and eat it, and it'll be delicious.
Did you guys see the article about the lady who bought a chest freezer at a yard sale like last month? And the people said, don't open the chest freezer because our church is using it as a time capsule. And someone from the church will be by like next week to pick up all the stuff inside of it. But, you know, it's a perfectly good chest freezer. So just don't open it for now. And so like nobody ever showed up. So like a month later, she opened it and their grandma was in there.
What?
They just were keeping grandma in the chest freezer and then sold it at a yard sale.
Oops. Okay, then. Well,
that's one way to do it.
And that's all we got today.
Thanks for listening.